Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of the podcast. I have two guests with me, Origin, who you're all familiar with, and also Tare, who hosts Wednesday Watts on the Right Minds YouTube channel. So welcome, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How's everyone doing?
Very, very busy, but otherwise doing very, very well.
Oh, great.
And how about you, Tare? You've got to give an introduction.
Right, do I?
Yeah.
If you look at my introductions on Wednesday Watts, you'll know that they're not even introductions, really.
No, this is fine. We're going to carry on. We're going to carry on without an introduction for Tare, and I'm sure he'll talk later on because I'm going to get him to introduce the first topic for us, which is the incitement of hatred consultation. The Ministry of Justice has released a number of documents, including some legal advice and also six proposals on the incitement of hatred, also known as the hate speech legislation, or at least what will become the hate speech legislation. And these six proposals are, and I'm going to let Tare run away with it.
So proposal one is change the language in the incitement provisions so that they protect more groups that are targeted by hateful speech. Because our laws are established to fine you if you incite violence and basically harass people within the
yes.
Summaries of Offences Act.
Yep. And this is the first thing I noticed when I was reading through this, quite a clever thing that they're trying to do. But what they currently refer to as hate speech provisions, you'll notice these politicians who are pushing for this say, well, we do have hate speech. It has to be essentially a disruption of the peace, creating public disorder. And they're going to amend it so that if you send somebody a message online, that it's going to be the same as, the equivalent of starting a riot. And that's what the current laws are there to prevent, right? Or at least to make it a criminal offense to harass people in a public setting or to incite all manner of harmful behaviors in public.
Yeah. Could we just clear up the Human Rights Act? I think specifically the sections they refer to, and correct me if I'm wrong, is section 161 and I want to say 31. But apparently only one person has ever been charged under those provisions. And the Summary Offences Act is actually, it's kind of like a lower tier version of the Crimes Act, if you can think about it that way. So none of the Summary Offence Act charges have tariffs of more than 3 months. So it's really for minor misdemeanors. It's just to collect like all those sort of nuisance type charges that don't really warrant serious punitive actions.
Yes, and when you read the provisions that are currently there, it is basically that someone who's being a public nuisance with regards to inciting racial or religious hatred. Or I believe it's purely racial, is it not?
Yeah,
there's no religious in
there. Yeah. And they want to add religion and sexuality and age.
What they want to add. And they, this is point two, is that they actually want to put it into the Crimes Act. So they want to make it more serious offence, like really serious, in fact.
Yes, in fact, this is if you've been anywhere, social media or seen email campaigns, this is the big thing that has been highlighted is the fact they want to increase criminal penalties from up to 3 years, which is much longer than for plenty of other offences such as common assault, which I believe is a maximum penalty of 1 year.
Yeah, correct.
Speech is more harmful than violence. Is what they believe. Speech is more dangerous than actual violence. The pen is mightier than the sword, if you will. That's the statement they're trying to make.
Okay.
Let's play
devil's advocate, Dewa. It's not worth, we shouldn't just gloss over it. Like, there is an argument to be made that
it is.
They're extrapolating it to a group population. So that they're saying that by communicating speech, which is hateful, is going to reach more people, therefore would be considered more dangerous. So really we're talking about, for example, common assault is really a micro level offense. It's one person against one person or maybe two people. And then you've got hate speech, which can reach many, many thousands. So, there is an argument there.
And the argument is also that it's a magnifying effect because when you're preaching hate speech, you're mentally damaging the people that you're talking negatively about, but also encouraging others to potentially commit acts. It's their argument throughout the entirety of basically.
But what's wrong here, and I would have to check exactly which one of the six proposals this falls under. But when I was reading through them, I realized that it's almost a form of pre-crime to say, well, you haven't actually committed a crime, or no damage has been done yet, but because of there is a high potential for there to be damage, therefore we're going to charge you with a crime.
So in the Royal Commission's recommendations, they didn't actually recommend political opinion being part of it. They were more on religious, even though they added somewhere like 20% people said they had received hate speech in regards to their political views, which is more than what was reported for religious views. It was 18%, I think.
But I do not believe that political speech is actually part of the recommendations here. I have gone through the recommendations and don't really see the recommendation for political speech. That is just something that's in the Human Rights Act, but they're not. I don't see them transferring them transferring that into the Crimes Act.
No, but they said that they were going to take that existing legislation and import it into the Crimes Act. And that's why it's under 161 of the Human Rights Act, is that it will include political speech. So this is where it gets like a little bit tricky. And that's what Jacinda bailed on in the AM show, where she just flat out denied that it wasn't going to include political speech.
My view is the changes that they're going to do to the sex part of discrimination by including the sexualities is basically going to do a sort of political persecution anyway, and religious persecution.
Well, the question will be what takes precedence. If you're religious, if both religion and sexuality are protected, then when they conflict, or who wins? And I suspect it comes down to who's making speech at the time, right? So if you quote some Bible texts or some texts from the Quran in public, that may be considered hate speech in that context, whereas they say that it wouldn't be in a different context. And that's something that I saw while reading through the legal recommendations that the Minister of Justice had put out, which was basically based on legislation from the UK, where they're saying, in this particular context, preaching hatred to the converted would not be a crime, but if it were to the unconverted, then potentially it could be a crime. Incredibly vague delineation there.
Everything is just too vague. I mean, like when you read over paragraph 13 in the companion legal paper, and it says here that language that detracts from social cohesion, such as jokes at the expense of marginalized communities, that was once not subject to much, if any, social sanction, is increasingly unacceptable in a democratic society. It is highly debatable whether language that has a negative impact on social cohesion could, for this reason alone, be subject to legal as well as social sanctions. So, you know, it's like, where is that line drawn?
Well, it's an admission. It's an admission that they've broken down social cohesion. How did we end up breaking down social cohesion through, multicultural projects, through neo-Marxist philosophies? Those in particular have broken down social cohesion. So the question then
You've just committed a hate speech. Hate speech. Then you can't speak against multiculturalism, do you?
Yeah, exactly. So but you may no longer point out what causes the breakdowns of social cohesion, because in pointing down how social cohesion is breaking down, you're committing a hate crime.
It was the emperor has no clothes moment.
Precisely. And this is based on, as I said, they're basing a lot of their legal framework on the UK. Obviously, we're a Commonwealth jurisdiction here. It's like, oh yeah, let's just import this from the UK. But we've seen exactly what's happened in the UK. People receive police visits based on reports
from Twitter.
Like, oh, so, you know, exactly. Your neighbor or some random person on Twitter has reported you for hate speech, and you get a visit from the police about it. This has happened this week in New Zealand, slightly unrelated, but to a very famous or well-known radical feminist, Rachel Stewart, who made a joke, a violent joke, at a, I guess, a transgender activist. I'm not quite sure who it was.
Yeah, it was a male. I think it was a male ally.
Male feminist. a male trans ally.
Well, I don't want to assume the gender. Sorry, I take that back.
And no, this is fine. On the show, we can say what we like. But because that had been reported to the police under the firearms legislation, because she has a firearms license, they already can perform this visit, which they did. They said, okay, we suspect that you're an unstable individual, prone to violence, and we can temporarily revoke your firearms license. She can challenge that. She's going to win that. But in the process, it's about making an example. And trying to right, it's the very fact that the police will go and visit somebody for a joke is already damaging, and that's what we're importing from the we're going to be importing that from the UK for everything, to everybody, anybody, for whatever reason. If you've said something online that somebody else has deemed hateful, you can possibly get a visit from the police. Nothing may come of it, but you can get a visit from the police for what? And there's no actual crime. Same thing. They have the concept of non-crime hate incidents in the UK. That's another word that I saw in the legal advice that was provided by the Ministry of Justice as part of these recommendations. So we're going to have non-crime hate incidents that the police will investigate. Again, as I said before, about pre-crime. Yeah, they don't call it pre-crime; they call it non-crime. Even less. Even it's a step down from pre-crime, non-crime. And so the police, well, that's what's going to be investigated, non-crime. So based on the fact that, oh, somebody found that hateful, maybe it will decrease social cohesion. Maybe this is stirring up hatred against and potentially future crimes against a group of people within society. You go to non-crime, you get non-justice. It's just an absolutely insane thing to be involved in. And that's precisely why they want to be involved in it, precisely why they want this legislation.
I think it's really dangerous when you think about the psychosocial effects that people can't express contempt or disgust at something that they do not have a preference for. And imagine, like, not being able to do that. Imagine not being able to tell an offensive joke. Not, you know, that I'd condone every single offensive joke. But when you think about it as a form of a pressure release valve for the culture and the wider society, the ability to be able to blow off some steam, the ability to be able to say that you can't stand something, and how we're going to have to guard ourselves against this. And when you have whole groups of people guarding their speech and not being able to express resentment, whether it is right or wrong, I just think it's a recipe for disaster. And now what we have with the Hipuapua document is an affirmation of ethnic rights that no other ethnicity is able to obtain in this country. And should there be any future valid criticisms in the future, people won't be able to express disgust or contempt.
Yeah, yeah. Ethnic preference laws that will essentially lead to minority rule. That is the implementation, which is not necessarily bad, but people may have criticisms of it. And what usually happens to minority rule is that it is eventually collapses.
I don't know what you're talking about, because
suppressing the public. Mm-hmm. Carry on.
Proposal 5 in the incitement discussion document clearly says that change the civil provision so that it makes incitement to discrimination against the law. So wouldn't the Hipuapua report be against the law in that regard?
They will control the definition of discrimination.
And that's done under the Human Rights Act as well. So that's how they justify certain minority groups getting preferential treatment. It all comes from the UN originally.
Yeah.
But that's how you can justify scholarships, for example, based on race, where we have for Māori and Pacifica.
Yeah, and we obviously have certain legislation in this country that's, you mentioned the scholarships as well, but even within our electoral system, the fact that you have two separate roles, they're not considered to be discriminatory. So what probably helps a little bit is the fact that you can freely identify as whatever you want in New Zealand. We talk about Maori as a racial group, but legally it's a voluntary identification where there's not really any evidence you have to provide that you have certain ethnic ancestry and so on. So we say,
I think you, in terms for a scholarship, I think you do have to whakapapa back to a respective iwi, and you have to be able to you fill out a form.
Okay, no, very good.
Yeah.
I think that depends who's granting the scholarship will have a lot to do with that.
Yeah, I just don't see it flying. I mean, I think we should be quite careful about making those sorts of statements because yeah. I don't think it's as easy as just self-identifying and then not having any substantial evidence to back it up. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as easy
but
as
that. I mean, Tare does bring an interesting point up that if there is strengthening of the incitement to discrimination, somebody could attempt to bring a legal challenge to something like He Puapua to say that the government is inciting discrimination. Whether that would get any traction, who knows? And this is something I theorize a lot about with these hate speech legislation. For those of you who read some of my other writings, will know that, you know, I think, okay, well, cool, if religious discrimination is a serious offense, then, you know, we should be able to target seek equal protection and equal justice for those who incite anti-Christian hatred as they might for any other religion. And same thing with if political speech is protected, we should be able to try to ensure that, say, anti-conservative speech is equally prosecuted. And also you could do something similar for, say, if marital status is protected, you could try and get equal protection for the traditional family and so on, of people inciting hatred against that. But will there be any way to successfully lobby prosecutions? Will there be any way to have a hand in the system? Or is it all going to be run from, the central office in Wellington somewhere, and the police will be directing exactly who's allowed to be prosecuted from there?
Yeah, well, the judiciary still has to treat like cases alike. I don't know how they could possibly differentiate between abusive and hurtful speech against someone who is a Muslim and, you know, the same or similar speech against someone who is a Christian.
The trick will be to get it to the judiciary. Well, that will be the hurdle, I suspect. I really suspect that will be the hurdle.
I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I've stood outside abortion clinics and, sung hymns and prayed, like, completely peacefully, and being subjected to all sorts of abuse, and my fellow parishioners as well, from people driving past. And it's, like, unrelenting. But, you know, if this passes, I'm just going to be taking down license plates and, like, laying complaints with police. I'm literally going to be praying every single week, or if not, like, every second week, and I'll be taking license plates there. Because we don't need to be subject to that. We're being completely peaceful. We're exercising now our freedom of speech. We're not inciting any form of hatred. All we're doing is praying for people and actually singing, you know, nice hymns, like, you know, nice music. You don't have any placards or anything like that. So, yeah, bring it on. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this law passing. If it passes, good. If it doesn't pass, good. I'm in that sort of mood, really, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it will definitely become interesting to see what happens. And I know that in the past, when these laws have been enacted in the UK, where this has been based off, generally speaking, conservatives have boycotted the law in terms of saying, we won't go to the police with this. We won't go to the police with that. But certainly in New Zealand, we need to have a very different mentality to say, okay, fine, if we have to have this law, we're going to make sure it's enforced equally. I do think that's the right way to go, and it's a far better way to go than just to get, you know, just to get hammered by it by refusing to participate.
Well, I mean, it's upholding the statement that if they create the law, then it's going to be used against them. Well, then actually do it and use it against them.
I'm just reviewing the various proposals. I know we started with proposal one, and we haven't. We didn't read out the other five, but we've actually discussed most of them. So from the first proposal about changing the language in the incitement provisions to protect more groups from hate speech, the second one was to replace the existing criminal provisions in the Human Rights Act with a new criminal offence in the Crimes Act that is clearer and more effective. We've discussed that as well. The third proposal is to increase the punishment for the criminal offence to better reflect its seriousness. Again, we discussed that quite early on. The fourth proposal was changing the language of the civil incitement provision to match the changes being made to the criminal provision. And this isn't something we haven't really discussed, but how is the civil incitement provision treated separately to the criminal provision, Origin?
Well, in a civil case, it's just you need to find some form of damage. the racial discrimination has somehow adversely affected you. So it's like, you know, it could be a particular tort that in regards to, say, some form of, kind of like defamation, I suppose, in a way. So the, I think they're probably going to create its own tort. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll be able to seek damages, and or for example, if they were going to say it was a magazine like what's that French one called again?
Charlie Hebdo.
Yeah, Charlie Hebdo. So in civil cases, you can you have two remedies. You can either seek damages, which is a form of monetary compensation. So for example, mm-hmm. like hurt feelings, like psychological trauma, emotional loss, or whatever. You know, they'll dream up something, and the other one is an injunction.
In this case, for instance, you're talking about something like Charlie Hebdo, so like Muhammad cartoons, say if the police did not consider this a criminal matter, you could still take a civil case to say, I've been emotionally damaged by this and seek damages for Muhammad cartoons.
Yeah, seek damages. And like if you knew, sorry, I'll finish my point, is that, you know, with the Charlie Hebdo magazine, if you you knew what was going to be published, say if there was going to be an expose on, say, Christians and their hateful praying outside of abortion clinics, then you could seek an injunction to stop that magazine being published. So that's the other remedy to a civil case. It's either injunction or damages.
To bring it to a specific New Zealand example, there have famously been anti-Christian art exhibitions in New Zealand. And
yes,
under the current law, it's not been possible to prevent those, but under if these provisions pass, if the police decide not to do anything, there are sufficient civil provisions for someone to be able to take a case to, say, prevent displaying of anti-Christian art. I won't mention the specifics.
No,
people will be familiar with them, but they're rather blasphemous. And so it would be possible.
And I'll be seeking an injunction. You know, like, that can't happen. We can't, like, if there is a civil remedy for it, we'll be seeking it. And it fits under this new legislation.
If these laws exist, then they should be used to their fullest extent. If people don't like that, well, make sure that they don't get passed, or make sure that they get revoked, although that rarely happens once you get these laws.
If you're thinking of bringing a blasphemous art exhibition to this country, no, go away, because we're going to make your life difficult.
And this is something I've brought up in previous articles about these hate speech laws, saying that, you know, they perhaps will be the return of blasphemy laws. And we will find out, because that's certainly looking like that could be the case. Atheism is not officially a religion, by the way. So atheism may not actually be protected by this law. Like, you may be able to mock atheists still, but atheists need to be very, very careful who they mock.
I just want to
Still there. I'm glad you found that funny.
I just want to clear up the Human Rights Act provisions. I had it wrong before. I just opened it. It's I got one of them wrong. It's actually section 61, which is racial disharmony, and then section 131, which is inciting racial disharmony. So it's those two provisions that they're wanting to transpose into the new legislation.
Yeah, into the Crimes Act. Yeah.
Sorry, into the Crimes Act, yeah.
Because it's not a new, the legislation is new, but they're not creating a new act. They're simply making changes to the Human Rights Act and the Crimes Act.
Yeah.
And then the fifth item here, this fifth proposal, is changing the civil provision so that it makes incitement to discriminate against the law. Under the ICCPR, which is the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, a United Nations document a multilateral treaty that New Zealand signed up to, hurrah, a non-binding treaty. And they quote here from it, saying that any advocacy of national, racial, or religious hatred that constitutes incitement to discrimination, hostility, or violence shall be prohibited by law. Aotearoa has signed up to the ICCPR. Thank you to whichever national or Labour government did that. But the incitement to discriminate, it says Aotearoa in this document, yes.
Oh, cracker.
Pretty much every document now, Aotearoa is referenced more than New Zealand will ever be.
Yes, this is official documentation from the Minister of Justice. So they say that this is discrimination, incitement to discrimination is not currently prohibited by Aotearoa law. the proposed changes would allow Aotearoa to better align our law with the ICCPR. Discriminate means to treat someone worse than others because of something about them, etc., etc. So it's very, very vague to me what this would actually do.
No more hassling gingers. No more hassling ginger-haired people.
I'm not sure if those types of characteristics are protected or not. We shall find out.
Well, any advocacy of national, racial, or religious hatred constitutes incitement to discrimination, hostility, or violence shall be prohibited by law. Well, it doesn't specify. It can be any racial group, any religion.
And so Proposal 6 adds to the ground of discrimination in the Human Rights Act to clarify that transgender, diverse, and intersex people are protected from discrimination. So you'll no longer be allowed to mock trannies anymore.
You have to date them now. You have to date them.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't advocate not dating them as well because they'd be incitement to discrimination.
All right. Yeah, I can see that. Thank you for that wonderful insight. You're right. That would become illegal. You're certainly right. Under this proposal, saying that you were, you know,
super straight.
Exactly. Wonderful.
Do you know what this is? I've got something to say, and because you know how, like, we have to almost like broadcast our preferences, right? Like what Kieran just said before is that, you know, I'm super straight, and it's a total open information. There's nothing secret and there's nothing hidden. It's like it's an accounting for all information. All information needs to be categorized, documented, spoken of, advertised. It's a complete blanket system that scoops everything up. There's no space, there's no solitude, there's no area that you can just be you. It's all encompassing. I mean, we're talking about the beast system. It really is. Yeah, imagine living in a world like this, what these proposals will create. And I'm prepared to do battle using this legislation. I'm not going to back down. But imagine people that don't have any faith, that have got nothing driving them onwards, and nothing to live for, and everything about them has to be documented. Everything has to be spoken of. There is no quiet space. There's no freedom from the gaze of others. The gaze of the system will be forever on everybody. And I just think that is an evil. And I suppose, in a way, maybe, I mean, this is another thing. I'm just working the stuff out in my head here, but maybe we shouldn't be using this.
In the companion legal paper, they think they went on about the legality of the police documenting hate speech, because they can document hate crimes if they're crimes, but they can't document something that's not a crime.
Yeah, I believe this is what I was talking with previously about the non-hate crime and non-crime hate incidents. Good, look for those words. Going back to what Origin is saying about using these laws, these are six different proposals, which I suspect they're just going to implement all of them. But they are all separate clauses of legislation. So you're not using something like one of the hypocrites who's opposing this, known as the opposition leader Judith Collins, who's responsible for the digital harmful digital communications. I say she's responsible. I know she fully supported it. I'm not sure how involved in it she was, but this is one of the things I'm so proud of. And that's a piece of legislation, an entire piece of legislation that's bad. You might say, well, I don't want to be involved with this piece of legislation, as opposed to these proposals, which are simply modifying the Crimes Act, the Human Rights Act. Yeah, certainly a lot of this is just really, really bad, right? We're saying, okay, this proposal, if it's implemented, might be something we can do battle with. This other stuff is simply horrific and there's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just good to question this, like our own internal motivations as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like we can't just, you know, indiscriminately try and wield this power, and we have to think about like the
I sometimes have people criticize me and like, oh, you know, don't use the ring, Frodo. You can't use the ring. You can't wield this power, which is not—it's not what I'm trying to say. But you know, in order to destroy the ring, you do need to assemble your armies and do battle. And you can't just sit around saying, "Oh, cool, we're gonna throw the ring away." There's a lot more. There's a lot more to the journey. There's a lot more to the journey of the ring than that. So
yeah, well, wasn't it you know, the ring, was it Isildur that had the ring, and then he refused to destroy it, and then eventually he was slain and it got lost in the river, but you know, someone else always finds the ring, eh? That's that's the lesson, is that, you know, you have to confront the evil and destroy it.
Certainly. So if you have the opportunity to destroy the evil, certainly. To wrap up the six proposals here, the very last thing they talk about is especially how the sixth proposal is going to sit under the Treaty of Waitangi, or they're trying to, by including you know, these pagan sexual practices as protected, categories, that they now fulfilling some kind of obligations under the Treaty of Waitangi. So it all comes round. Everything fits together in this strange puzzle. Like, yeah. Because that's obviously not what the Treaty of Waitangi is about, but that subversion of the Treaty of Waitangi, which is something that they're doing across the board on steroids now with the Hapuapua document, where you know, they're consulting on that, and obviously they're going to implement it perhaps under a different name. But the very idea that the government is pushing with co-governance is a violation of the treaty, is a perversion of the treaty. It's like blatantly against Article 1 of the treaty, which gives governance, you know, the governance of the land. That's government, that's governance, is given to the representative of the Queen, the Governor General, and, you know, the Prime Minister and Parliament.
And worth to mention that that's actually included in Te Tiriti, which is the Māori version. So even the Māori at the time would have understood it to mean kowānatanga, meaning governance, and that's in their Article 1. So,
and they would have known full well that a governor was somebody who sat above the chiefs. A governor was somebody who ruled the whole land. That was is rather obvious from the first article. Yet they subvert the treaty, and they don't give anyone access to the means of information. So when the media presents information, when the government presents information to the masses, nobody's allowed to just come in there and say, hey, wait a minute, doesn't the treaty say that governance belongs to the crown, therefore co-governance is against the treaty? You haven't heard anybody say that anywhere. I haven't heard anybody say that. That would seem rather obvious. That's because it's not allowed to be said, but it's obvious.
This is the lie. And, you know, when you think about Alexander Solzhenitsyn, when he was criticizing the communists, and I don't want to just go on a big communist rant, but he said that, like, live not by lies. And the whole communist system was based on this predicate, keeping these lies going.
The people who were publishing them, the people who were publishing them knew they were lies. People who were reading them knew they were lies. Yep. People who were repeating them knew they were lies. But they knew, well, all you've got to do is repeat the lie. And you don't have to believe it. You don't have to believe it. You just have to say it. And nobody is allowed to point out the truth. Exactly. Yeah. And same thing now with these proposals here, talking specifically about the pagan sexual practices, claiming that they're somehow in the treaty. Obviously, the third article of the treaty talks about the
equal rights.
The duties. Yeah, equal rights, but not just equal. It doesn't say equal rights, right? It talks about the privileges and the duties of British subjects. The tikanga of the British.
Yeah, well, Māori and British were equal before the law.
But it specifically refers to the British tikanga, the British tradition and law and legal system, etc., which has rights and duties, is what would be the norm across all of New Zealand. Again, that was also rather straightforward and simply understood. There was absolutely no intent to preserve and promote the pagan practices that were in the process of being wiped out, that were in the process of being suppressed. That was obviously part of the intent there from both sides, because the Māori themselves worked very hard to suppress and remove these pagan practices.
Exactly. And then it was overall better. I do want to...
Until these things were dug up in the 70s and the hippies. Yeah. Thank you, hippies.
Oh, I hate hippies so much. And, well, I was raised by them. I'm allowed to say that, aren't I? Or am I not allowed to discriminate against hippies?
You're allowed to discriminate against your own groups. So if you were raised by hippies, it's probably okay.
Okay. Oh, phew. I've looked at the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, and looking at Article 27 of the Covenant, and this is the only place where the word minorities is brought up. And in Article 27, it states, in those states in which ethnic, religious, or linguistic minorities exist, persons belonging to such minorities shall not be denied the right, in community with the other members of their group, to enjoy their own culture, to profess and practice their own religion, or to use their own language. So it, nowhere in this does it say there is preferential exclusiveness of minority culture away from the majority culture. So I don't think we need to worry about anything as Christians, even though we are dwindling in number here in this country. I think that these laws can be implemented against anyone, and that we would be a protected group based on
at least proposal five, speaking specifically about that proposal. Who knows? But yeah, some of these proposals may be entirely innocuous, but others may be very, very harmful. Well, very good. I believe we have reviewed all these proposals. We've delved not only into hate speech, but also into the conversion of New Zealand into an ethnic state. This is quite interesting to see how much of this is linked and how much of these themes show up time and time again across what would seem like separate agendas, but they're part of the grand plan.
But did we actually end up looking at we didn't end up looking at the actual Te Puapua document. That's what I wanted to bring up.
Sure. If you have got something to dig into, bring it up.
In the introduction for Te Puapua, it outlines that Aotearoa is comparatively advanced globally in providing for Māori inclusion in kāwanatanga karauna, the state governance and cultural rights, although there remains room for improvement. So this is where they're talking about kāwanatanga, and that's what we brought up before, is that they're actually seeking to get that governance. Just to clarify, the word kāwanatanga is mentioned in the Te Puapua document, and I just don't think they, it would be a breach of the treaty, really, if they had special rights in terms of governance. It was meant to be one governance under the crown, even in Article 1 of Te Tiriti, which is their translation, and that what they understood to mean.
There is an interesting point here, and this is discussed by Professor Elizabeth Rata from the Faculty of Education of the University of Auckland in her excellent article, Ethno-Nationalism or Democratic Nationalism, Which Way for New Zealand? She does point out that the document, a report, we should call it, which has just been presented to Cabinet and is being consulted on with various Maori groups. And we will find out which ones those are. They may take several years to decide who gets to represent them, but once that's done, I'm sure the government will move forward with any consultation. So the report describes our future as an ethno-state, she says. It sets out a timeline for the transformational constitutional change. This will divide the polity into three streams, the rangitiratanga stream, the kawangatanga stream, and the ritetahi stream. The final one apparently is for all New Zealanders. Kawangatanga stream, they say, is for the crown. But I'm not sure if, seems to be contradictory.
Yeah, well, because tino rangatiratanga, right, means absolute authority in Māori.
Yeah, so they're referring to it as basically self-determination in this story. So she's quoting here again from Te Puapua, which talks about they want to transfer structure and governance to realize self-determination. And this self-determination is not something I would be opposed to if a particular iwi were to want more self-determination. But what's actually happening is, again, what they should talk about is co-governance, which is not self-determination, but that's minority rule over the democratic process. Where
what it's doing, and this is a point I wanted to raise before, is that when you're getting one group that has these rights to self-determination based on ethnic lines, you are going to get other groups wanting to do the same. And like, why not? That's the question that should be asked. So why wouldn't you want to have preferential treatment for your own ethnic group? And this is the dangerous question. This is the dangerous territory. The preferential treatment, it comes with its own advantages. Why wouldn't you want to grasp that? This is the, you know, the absolute rationality about that. Is I you know, can you just imagine just groups of people, whether it be Pacifica, European descended people, now we've got a bit large Chinese community. Why wouldn't you want to have preferential ethnic treatment? You know, it's just this is why it's ridiculous.
The reason why maybe you wouldn't want it is because the results tend to be like, you know, race riots and civil wars and
exactly.
All kinds of horrible things happen. That's the million-dollar question that they won't want to answer.
Well, it's a nation-ending question.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a nation-ending process because you can't have, essentially it's a form of civic nationalism. Yeah. You can't have any civic nation with two streams. Mm-hmm. Because other people want their own preferential treatment.
Yeah. And they're not just talking about two streams here. I said they're talking about three separate streams. So they're you know, Maori get one stream, the Crown gets another stream, which I guess is, you know, a nice fancy word for the governing elites. And then the rest of us get our third, get a little trickle.
Yeah, no one wants to tolerate that. Like, no one would accept
and
that.
Like,
no one in their right mind.
Yeah. So, and this is obviously why people are very upset about this and going to get more and more upset. It's something the media can't discuss. So then I'm trying to figure out, well, what's going on? Why are people upset about this? It will be interesting to see how this filters through the democratic process as we get into elections, because obviously they're not going to implement this change very, very quickly. If people see this coming, if people are afraid of this, we may get some very interesting things happen at the next election.
Do you see a snap election over this?
I don't see a snap election over this because the Labour Party is united behind the
majority.
They have an outright majority, no problems. They have until the next natural election to
say, because you can have a snap election, right, just on a controversial issue. It's like re-elect us based on, it's kind of what England did, right? So with Brexit, so they held another election based on whether Brexit would pass or not. So that's probably
what I would see far more likely is that this government would simply say, oh no, we have the mandate because we have the majority, so we have the mandate to just do whatever we want.
They have been sort of doing it in a way with their financial policies. Like, they've been working towards that already.
Like, in what sense?
The budget and other financial instruments that they've implemented recently.
Yes, they've already been implementing. I see what Tara is saying. They've already been implementing the Hupuapua report before we even got it, in terms of separate health authority, and they're moving forward with a new water management system in the South Island.
True.
That, you know, all of these little things that, you know, people will look at and think, largely it's a stripping of power from local areas.
So in terms of a constitutional framework, this is the thing where this possibly could go is for constitutional reform. So at the moment, the way our constitution is structured is that parliament has absolute supremacy. So all it takes is for a new government to be elected and all this is gone. All of it's gone. And in fact, if parliament so wanted to do so through the election of, you know, particular parties, could do away with, say, for instance, the principles of the treaty, participation and protection and partnership, which is enshrined going back to the State-Owned Enterprises Act. Where they had all the troubles about Maori inclusion when they tried to sell off the state-owned assets and make them separate companies. But that could all be legislated away. What they may want to do, this is the thing, if Labour and particularly the Greens, you know, get another term, this is where it could be heading for full constitutional reform. Where
if they win the next election, they would push, I guess, for an implementation of they would essentially entrench new electoral provisions, bring in an upper house that is set up in such a way to make reverting this impossible. Right, that's what you would do if you wanted to make this permanent. The other thing is that they could gamble. You could also gamble on the fact that the governments rarely just roll things back. And so essentially hoping that the legislation being passed makes it too difficult for the next government to roll it back, because they could say, hey, if you do this, there will be like race riots because we're going to frame this to say that you're racist. But then, who knows, if we have hate speech legislation, it's possible that the next government could use that to its advantage to suppress anybody from attempting to incite racial disharmony. So who knows? Things could get very interesting.
This is a nightmare.
I
just did a 180. Just did a 180.
It could get very, very. It could get very ugly. But people may just not pay enough attention. Right, it's a possibility that people don't notice, people don't care, it doesn't affect them right away.
And, Sleepy Hobbit syndrome.
Yeah, we could be having a scourging of the Shire.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to be pleasant at all. Well, I managed to get the other points. I think those are all the points that I wanted to raise at this stage.
Definitely going to be a strange mix of legislation that will go together, because with the anti-hate speech provisions, they will attempt, you know, the main focus will be social cohesion. So enforced social cohesion and mandated ethno-nationalism. It will be an interesting attempt to pull off something that hasn't really worked, because your civic life tends to disintegrate under these conditions, and the attempt will be to hold it together. Well, that's a nice, heartwarming, positive to finish on. So hold that thought, and I believe that we... we're going to have to think of some good news, a nice, wholesome topic for the next podcast. We're going to wrap up this show. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Do go to the website, rightminds.nz, sign up to the newsletter. Also go to the Telegram channel, look for Diwa de Boer on there, or click through to the Telegram link on the website, and we will see you in the next podcast.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it has been fun. Good night all, and I'd like to finish with the traditional Right Minds podcast music segment. And tonight, we'd like to bless your ears with a bit of Schubert, Der Wanderer. It's some German Lied. Lied is like just a word for song, and it's an amazing piece, and I hope you enjoy it. Vom Gebirge her.